Okay, so good afternoon. Thank you for waiting when for this last-minute conference. Suppose people know me. I'm Sylvie Fodor, the Executive Director of CEPIC. I would like to introduce Thomas Hoeppner. Thomas Hoeppner has been representing CEPIC in at least two cases for the moment. The Google case, which we are fighting at the European Commission since 2013, and also drafting for us a white paper on the issues that will be presented today, which we think of global importance. And short presentations, and Thomas will be open to all your questions. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Yeah, is it on? Yeah, can you hear me? Great. Well, yeah, CEPIC is not just great in organizing worldwide conferences such as today, but also at the forefront of protecting your industry's interests. And I would like to make you aware of the latest campaign for a better protection of images online. I would like to touch upon the current challenges for the image industry, then consider the legal background or the reasons why these challenges came up, and then finally have a look at possible solutions to these challenges. What are the challenges? First, I would like to have a look at the obvious disparity between the demand for images and its current value or the revenues generated by it. Then I would like to have a look at some examples of platforms that are taking advantage of the current legal situation and generating revenues on account of image providers. So let's have a look at the current situation. I think it's a rather sad situation. If I look at the image industry as an external, I would say it is rather frightening that we witness a certain decline of an entire industry, even though currently the demand for images is probably higher than it has ever been before. So there's a certain imbalance between the demand, which is very high, and the revenues that flow to image providers, which is possibly or arguably the lowest ever. And if you look at the fact that 45% of all searches on Google are actually related to images, you would assume, well, if there's such a high demand, then, you know, some money must be involved. Or if you also consider that the high amount of sharing of images online, I gave you a figure there, daily 1.8 billion images were shared on Flickr, Snapshot, Instagram, and Facebook on, as I said, on one day, an increase of 260%. So you really wonder how come there is such high interest in images, obviously, but the revenues are actually declining, the fees you can expect are declining, and less customers are willing to pay. But one reason for that is basically that there is a new business model out there that is called platform aggregation of content, which aims at taking advantage of third-party content and aggregating that content to attract customers and advertisers to your own website, to the aggregator's website, without any consideration for the actual creators of the content aggregated. And we will have a look at some of those aggregators later on. If you look at the American market, you will find that these platforms, usually two-sided platforms, advertised-based, and the concept is we attract users with attractive content, and that content we just take from someone else's website, that in the U.S. there's a huge increase of that type of companies. Something like 400 startups have been have come forward during the last couple of years. 400 aggregators that all figured, well, the cheapest way to create ad revenues is to take attractive content elsewhere without having own costs and just create some sort of artificial attractive website that enables sharing or whatever, and then customers will come, and as a result of it, advertisers will come as well, and we don't care about those that actually create the content. I think we will all agree that the biggest issue at the moment is the Google image search, in particular the new image search. What has happened, instead of leading searchers to the source of an image, now if a searcher is clicking on a thumbnail within Google, it is actually led to a separate Google website where this image is displayed in full size and often in high resolution, and it's ready for a download by that user. And of course, the user isn't even aware of the fact that this image is not there because of a licensing agreement between Google and the image provider, but actually just the result of what is called framing without any money flowing back to the creators. That is actually of very high significance, this image search for Google, considering that 45% of the image of the search traffic is related to images. So if you consider or compare that with the 60 billion revenues of Google, you wonder where the money is actually flowing to. What are the issues? The issues are not just for the image providers. Obviously, they lose traffic, they lose revenues, and also the authors lose their face because they are deprived of the credit they deserve. But it's actually also not very effective and efficient for users, because they don't understand this system and they are now incentivized to download that image on Google and thereby to infringe copyright law, because of course that is, these images are copyright protected, so the risk of unconscious copyright infringements increases significantly. But looking back at the results for the image providers, I think this is the most shocking result. This graph shows the development of traffic going to websites of one of the largest image providers in the world. This image provider has websites all over Europe, and as you may know, the new Google image search has not been rolled out in only two countries, which is Germany and France. In these two countries, we still have the old design where a click on a thumbnail leads the user directly to the source website that published the image in the first place. We assume that that is due to political pressure in France and Germany. But more importantly, what you can see here, this image provider, the traffic development is actually brilliant. You know, they have done everything right. They have obviously improved their website. They have made their website more attractive, published more attractive images. So that is exactly what you would like to see if you put a lot of effort in your website. But what actually happens as a result of the change of the Google image searches, that on those sites affected, the traffic simply dropped to nearly zero, and it took several years to actually come back just a little bit. And if I now tell you that this little increase here is not normal organic search, but actually paid search, you know, ads that generate traffic, you know that you can forget about that, because what you see here is simply buying back the traffic that Google has originally taken away from that website. So what we see here is a huge gap, and that gap of traffic is now completely with Google. Users are staying on Google's website. That is where users will spend their time. That is what advertisers will notice, and that is where advertisers will now shift their budgets to. Whereas the website of that poor image provider is basically, from an advertiser perspective, irrelevant. But it's not just advertising relevant for advertising budget. It's also, of course, relevant for your licensing approaches. If you want customers to buy your images, you need them on your site. You need to get in contact with them. But if Google is blocking you off, then the chances for that are remote. Of course, Google is not the only platform that takes advantage of images. There's a huge area, a huge industry, for instance, in the field of social media that is entirely based on the use of third-party content, most importantly images, to attract users to their platforms and as a result of it, advertisers. So here's an example of Pinterest. Pinterest has a growth rate of 88%. It's the largest growing social network. It is worth millions. And what is interesting, 80% of the images pinned on Pinterest are actually repins. That means they have been taken from someone else's website and simply been repinned on Pinterest, without, of course, any money flowing back to the original site that had all the costs. Another example is Tumblr. Again, same mechanism. The entire concept is based on third-party images using framing technology because of a legal loophole that I will be talking about later on. And the same mechanism here, if you click on one preview, you see the full-sized image ready for download. No need whatsoever to click through to the source website, because if you can download all there, and you can see it all there, why bother going to the site that originally published it? Third and last example, same principle as Flickr. It looks very similar to the Google image search, and Flickr is just one of the more successful ones that use that mechanism. So what are the reasons for that? Well, of course, there are many loopholes if you look at the situation for image providers, but I want to focus on three because I think these are the most fundamental ones in this context. First issue is framing, that framing is permissible, even though I believe it shouldn't. The second issue is a too broad privilege, a liability privilege of so-called host providers. And the third is a so-called concept of implied consent, where a copyright holder loses its right because of an apparent implied consent. So framing. What is framing? Technically, it's a solution where you take an image that has been hosted on a third-party website and you make it visible on your own website without actually having to upload it on your own website through a link, a permanent link that is created. So you are not uploading the image, you are just kind of having a visual link to the source. But the technology is so advanced that the normal user perceives this image as being part of the normal image they can see, as being embedded in a normal uploaded image. They don't see the difference between a framed image and an uploaded image. And the issue here is, from a legal perspective, that unfortunately, because of the current legislative framework, the InfoSoc Directive or the Copyright Directive, it was impossible for the European Court of Justice to differentiate between the permissibility of hyperlinking and the permissibility of framing. They rather had to deal with both under the same approach. And the Court of Justice thought, well, hyperlinks are so important nowadays online that we have to allow it. You know, we can't just disallow hyperlinking for copyright reasons, then we break the internet sort of thing. Unfortunately, the Court of Justice has not understood that there's a huge difference between a simple link that you can consider as a teaser to a website that attracts the user to click on it and then they still land on the website, and a hyperlink and a frame where you actually see the full content. You know, there's a huge difference whether you just see a link, you know, and you click on it to get where you want to, or you see the full thing. And that difference, you know, seeing the full thing in the frame and just a little teaser, is something that the Court of Justice couldn't take into consideration because the law didn't allow that differentiation. And therefore, there is the original quote of the court. It said that the authorization of the copyright holder is not required. Basically, you can't say anything against it. Even if a work is displayed in a way that it gives the impression that the work is actually appearing on the site that links, where the link is found. So that actually the user assumes that is the website where the image has been uploaded. But even if that's the case, you know, the user thinks that's, you know, the website where the image is coming from, even in that situation, the frame will not be considered as requiring the authorization of the copyright holder. But from a policy perspective, I think this is entirely wrong. Because as I said, there are huge differences between hyperlinks and frames. Actually, frames are much more similar to a normal uploading of images. As I said, a user can't see the difference between an uploaded image and a framed image. So I think if, from the user's perspective, both appear the same, the law should also have the same approach to it and shouldn't artificially differentiate here. If you don't follow that differentiation, the outcome will be that actually once you have published a picture online, it is automatically exhausted because everyone can use it now via framing. But this concept of exhaustion of your right is not what the current legal framework had in mind. Second issue, host provider privilege. What does it mean? The host provider privilege is a legal privilege for websites that simply host third-party content, make it available on their website without uploading their own content. They are just like a platform that allows others to upload their content and displaying it, at least that's what they hoped, in a neutral way, making it available on their website. And the host provider privilege said, well, simply because it's not your own content, you are just giving others a platform to upload their content on your site, you should be privileged, and therefore you will only be held liable to damages if you are actually aware of the fact that there are illegal activities going on your platform. But unfortunately, this host provider privilege, when it was developed at some point in 2000, didn't consider that this is like a carte blanche for platforms to say, well, we are just host providers, so we just invite everyone to bring their content to us, legal content, illegal content, and then we kind of change it and combine it in a way that our website gets really attractive, and because of that, we will get then ad revenues and build our business model on this exception. And we don't care about illegal content on our websites because we say we are host providers. So just giving you an example, YouTube, you wouldn't consider YouTube as a neutral platform. But of course, YouTube is saying we are just host providers. There are tons of illegal films on YouTube, but we don't care. We are not liable for that because it's not our responsibility. We are host providers, and only if someone makes us aware of it, then we will take it down. That doesn't preclude the same guy that uploaded it to upload it on another platform, on the same platform the very next day, so this notice and take down mechanism is entirely ineffective. But that's unfortunately the current sad situation. So again, I think it is unfair that platforms can take advantage of this privilege and actively promote, ultimately, piracy, interfere with the organization and presentation of illegally uploaded content to make their own, create their own revenues and attract advertisers. Also, the notice and takedown procedure is ineffective and needs amendment. So, third issue, implied consent. What does that mean? Well, some courts have decided that if you, as an image provider, upload an image to your website without using technical mechanisms to block off search engines from crawling your sites, the Roberts Exclusion Protocol, the Roberts TXT, which kind of makes your images invisible, if you don't do that, you give an implied consent to search engines to use your images. Because that's really what the court assumed is, well, if these great chances are out there, you know, you just use a bit of a small short file, you know, a Roberts TXT file, and that's the issue sorted, they can't take your image anymore. Well, if you don't do that, well, obviously that has to be interpreted as meaning you authorize search engines to do whatever they like with your images. And here's this original quote. Again, if you don't use technical mechanisms, then you're basically giving it all for free. Unfortunately, again, and this is the highest court in Germany that said that, I think this is entirely false. Because those that have ever tried to use Robots TXT will know that in fact you can't really use it. You can't rely on it. If you use Robots TXT, for instance, to block out Google images, you will also not be found in the image universals, which are the most important, which is the most important section of search results in the general horizontal web search. So basically, you can forget to be seen. You will never be found. You're blocking yourself out of the internet. And more importantly, you can't expect that as an image provider from your licensee. You can't go to a customer and say, you've just paid me a licensing fee for my image, but now I have to ask you to please use Robots.txt2 to block off your images from being found. Then the customer will say, well, but I want your image to really make my website more attractive. If I now block off, you know, my images from being found, that whole purpose of me buying your images, you know, can't be achieved anymore. Because my competitor that has the same image and doesn't make it available to search engines, he will be found in the search results now. And he will then compete and succeed with me. And, you know, why should I bother then, you know, forget it. I'm not doing it. So ultimately, it's not possible to rely on Robots.txt. It's just not advanced enough. It's not like a sophisticated rights expression language or anything like it. And I'm aware of the fact that the courts simply have not looked at that weakness. They simply have never considered the weaknesses of the current apparent technical instruments. And also, there are also some other issues with it, but I don't want to get into detail. Let's focus now on possible solutions. Actually, the timing for possible solutions couldn't be better, because last autumn, a new European Commission has been elected, and they have got their own new agenda. And that's the European Digital Agenda, basically promoting Europeans' digital economy, but also making sure that the economy, the digital economy we all enjoy, is flourishing, and as a part of that, we need creative content. And to this end, there are already some campaigns pending that aim at strengthening copyrights online. Currently, the European Parliament is discussing the so-called Julia Reda's report on the implementation of the Infrastructure Directive. The report as such is very weak, and we hope that they don't follow that line, but at least they are having it on their agenda. More promising are the campaigns of the new Commissioner for Digital Economy and Society, Günther Oettinger, who has promised that he wants to improve the situation for copyright holders online. And I think something will come from that, and we have to make sure, the image industry has to make sure that they are part of that, that they are not left out, that not just other publishers are promoted and getting a better protection, but actually that those in I would say, higher need, the individual photographers and the image providers also receive a stronger protection. The first legislative proposal is expected for the end of 2015, so now is the time to get yourself heard, and that's why SEPIC has decided to come forward and to lead a campaign to get the interests of your industry heard. And we want to focus on these three issues to start off with. First of all, we would suggest that framing should be included as the right of communication so that it is reserved to the rights holder. The rights holder shall decide who can frame your images and who can not. And also, we want to exclude providers, websites that actively facilitate and promote piracy from the host provider privilege so that we can directly target them rather than having to go to the individual infringer. We can turn to the platform and say, shut your platform down, because actually what you're doing here is aiding and abetting piracy. So please find your business elsewhere. And thirdly, we want to ensure that no court will ever say something like, if you don't use Robots.txt, you are giving implied consent to whatever anyone else wants to do with it. And these three points, if we focus on them and we bring forward our arguments and we emphasize them wherever we can, whenever we talk to a politician, national, European level, whoever we meet, I'm sure we will have an impact. Only a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to the European Commission and we were kind of invited with open arms saying, look, this is something that we are really looking for, that sort of information. Because we are only politicians, we don't know how the market works, so please tell us what you need, what you require, where your shortcomings are, where you have to head to. And that's why I would like to see you all supporting SEPIC's campaign in this matter. You can all contribute with technical tools, with experience, with some data on your websites, how you have suffered, all that sort of thing. And I think if we all come together on this important issue for all industry, we will get something out of it. So instead of just witnessing this industry to further go downhill, I think it's time for your industry to stand up and say, look, for 15 years or so, we've entirely forgotten about us, the creative works of our employees. So now it's time to do something about it. For further details on this, please turn to Sylvie Fodor or Alfonso, who are very heavily involved in promoting this campaign, but of course also the SEPIC supporters elsewhere. So thank you for your attention, and I hope we get somewhere. Are there any questions? Then let me stay there for a few minutes.
On the actual global issue.
Yeah. On the global issue, that's a good point. Two points to be made. First of all, if these amendments are implemented, these improvements are implemented, the European area will be protected. If they sit in the US or if they sit in Asia, it doesn't matter. If they want to do business in Europe, they have to apply European rules and they have to stick to whatever European law imposes on them. So that is not an issue. But if you ask yourself, well, how can we transfer that hopefully better protection in the near future to a global level, then I would say, well, start campaigning in your own jurisdiction. And if that's the United States, I'm sure there will be open ears for that too. And if that's in Asia, we have to go there too. Of course, it would be, you know, it would be great to have a global campaign saying, look, there's a global issue, we have to target it globally. But unfortunately, my feeling is that the politicians simply don't have that global approach yet. If they see, well, that is just a general paper that deals with global issues, they may not take it as seriously as if you say, look, I'm talking to you here, European legislator, and I want exactly this amendment from you, and there's not just a general chit-chat here. This is what I want from you. I think this is generally more effective. So if we turn to the United States, of course, the presentation will, in its core, would look similar, but the amendments we would suggest would be different. You know, but for European business, the issue would be, if you like, solved, because anyone that does business in Europe, no matter where they are located, would have to apply the new law.
Just a few words to finish. One is thanking Thomas Hofner for the extreme efforts that he is putting in behalf of SEPIC, in fact, in behalf of our industry, in behalf of our business. I think all of you will support SEPIC in this extraordinary effort that we have, because we are in front of a unique thing in time. Legislation is not changing every year, and when that happens, we have to be actually very active to protect our business. So thank you for your assistance, and I wish that you spread the rumor. We are actually trying to fight against Google and trying to modify legislation in the European Parliament. So thank you for all your help. Thomas, many thanks for your effort.